Dean texted me on December 31st, New Year's Eve, and said, would you be able to preach? And of course, I responded back, absolutely, what is my topic? And he texted the word bull. And I thought, huh, I've never preached on bull before. Can you clarify? And he said, oh, it's a movie series. I said, fantastic. You know, what movie do I get? And he said, Ferdinand. And I said, what is a Ferdinand? And he said, don't worry, your kids, your wife, you guys will love it. It's a great story. So I show up at the theater right on 23 and 270 with my journal. And I'm sitting in the audience, and everyone else is enjoying the movie, but I'm like writing fierce notes, like, oh, that was good, that was good. And the dilemma is Dean didn't tell me what Bible passage to preach. He just said, watch Ferdinand, and then align it to a scripture verse. And I'm thinking, okay, a talking bull, Balaam's donkey. I mean, that's the best I could come up with. But then as I saw the movie, I thought, this is a fantastic movie. I love it. There's this big bull who is a lover, not a fighter. He enjoys flowers, believe it or not, enjoys smelling flowers. He's a dreamer. And all of his other colleagues are frustrated at him. They think this guy's a joke. You know, why don't you just fit in line? Why don't you just blend in like the rest of us who want to fight in the ring against the matador? He's taken from his family. And as I begin to think about the concept, I think this is Joseph. This is the Joseph story, taken from the family, a dreamer. And as I began to think about it more and more, the concept of the Now Playing series, if you're taking notes, the reason why we're talking about this is because the greatest stories in our culture, in our films, point to the greatest stories. So if you're brand new today, welcome. We don't always give popcorn and candy and soda. So I know one lady who traveled from Massachusetts, the first service, because she said, I came a year ago and it was candy day, so I'm writing it in. So she literally wrote that in for her year. I was like, that's great, that's great. But we're talking today, if you're following along, check it out. If you want to stand out, prepare to stand alone. If you want to stand out in this world, prepare to stand alone. That's what Ferdinand had to do. He stood alone. Everyone else made fun of him. Everyone else thought he was odd, but he stood out because he stood alone. You might ask the question, is that even what we're supposed to do? Because in a lot of our households, we grew up where it was, hey kids, don't stick out, just fit in, just blend in, don't, you know, stick your head out, you'll get your neck cut off, all this type of stuff. We're told as young children to march in line. And is that what we're supposed to do according to scripture? It says in Romans 12, the Apostle Paul says to the church at Rome, he says, do not be conformed to the patterns of the world. Do not be conformed to the patterns of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Oh, and some of you are looking at my arm, by the way. I did not ride a bull. Someone thought that. Someone thought, you really studied hard for this message. Did you fall riding the bull? No, I said age, torn labrum and rotator cuff. So you know, it's all good though. Would have been a cooler story about the bull. But Matthew, Jesus' disciple, expands further and says that it's our good works that are supposed to make us stick out to the world. Not our odd behavior, not something crazy, not our political stance even, but it's supposed to be the good works that we do that show the rest of the world and point them to our God. So join with me in Genesis 37. We're gonna talk today about how in order to stand out, you need to stand alone. We meet this guy, young guy, probably about 17 years old, people think, Joseph, and he has the coat of many colors. And I have a chart here where you're gonna see on the left side, he stood out, but because he stood out, he first had to stand alone. In verse 3, it says, now Jacob, or Israel, loved Joseph more than all of his other sons because he was the son of his old age, so he made him a very colored tunic. Not a good parenting tip, by the way, folks, okay? Do not give one of your kids, like, something really cool. It's not a good thing. But his brothers saw that their father loved him more than anybody else, so they hated him, and they could not speak to him on friendly terms. Some of us grew up in that type of house, that type of drama, where maybe one of the parents liked a certain sport, and because we played that sport, they kind of had this affinity toward us or our brother or our sister. That's a tough place to be. But Joseph stood out among all of his other brothers because of this multicolored coat. And as a result, he was ignored and hated. If that wasn't bad enough, in verse 5, he was a dreamer. And as a dreamer, he had this dream where he was essentially this sheaf, and his other brothers were sheaves in the field. And he said, let me tell you my dream. You guys bowed down to me. Sounds a little bit like our athletics today many times, right? But that did not go over well. In fact, they hated him even more. He had a second dream where he dreamed that the sun, moon, and stars bowed down to him. And this time his father steps up and he rebukes him and says, dude, get in line. You know, be quiet. Do you think we're actually gonna bow to you? Now, some of us had dreams from a very young age. And now the Olympics are going on, right? It's funny, my two daughters, my son's 12, so he's kind of just chilling in his basketball world, but my two daughters are like, Dad, can we be in the next Olympics? And I say, yeah, you know, do you want to do that? And so even them watching the show, it speaks to them about this dream. And I'm convinced that God has placed a dream inside each one of our hearts. In fact, it says in the Bible in Genesis 1:1, it says, God said, let there be light, and then he played Xbox, right? No. God said, let there be light, and there was light. In other words, God spoke, and something was created. How many of you have ever said abracadabra as a kid? Anybody? Anybody? Front row? Yeah? All right. Anybody else in the back row? Okay. We say abracadabra. How many of you know what it means? Right? We just say this word. We don't know what it means. It's a hardwired concept built into us. It means I create as I speak, or it came to pass as it was spoken. The actual Hebrew letters are in the translation, abracadabra, Father, Son, and Spirit. It's crazy. Google it sometime. But why I'm saying that is because I believe we were hardwired to co-create. God created us, the Creator, in his image to co-create. And many of us, if we're honest, we're cynical because we had a dream. We had a dream to marry that one person or go to that one place or do that one job, and then we had resistance. And because we had resistance, at least me, maybe I'm just talking about me, but I began to get cynical as I grew older and say, well, you know, come on, dreams are for kids, right? Not tricks are for kids, dreams are for kids, right? But no, actually, God places within his servants big dreams, and that's exactly what Joseph did. It says they hated him even more for his actual dreams. So let's continue on. What happens? Well, they begin to plot against him, and he goes into a pit. They sell him. They wanted to kill him. Reuben says, no, don't kill him. Let's just put him in this pit. Reuben goes away, and sure enough, they sell him for silver. Think about that. I know some of us don't like our brothers or sisters, but could you sell them for silver? Don't answer that question, okay? I think it said they even got some gum from it, really, in the text. They got some gum as well, okay. But the point is this, Joseph, he is not a well-received guy. And most of us, we would kill our dreams because our heart is a place of emotion. And because the heart allows pain and love, many times, adults, we kill our hearts altogether. So we don't feel pain, but we don't feel love either. Joseph keeps dreaming. If you're following along, it says in chapter 39, let's go there. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. He's sold for silver. And what happens? He's bought. Now, he's sold to a pretty influential guy. And I love verse 2 because even though he stood up and stood alone because there was no one else on that block where he was sold, notice it says that God was with him, so he became a successful man. I think too many times we downplay success, people of faith. We say, oh, well, that's the prosperity gospel, and you know, we shouldn't aspire to be successful. I challenge you, Nehemiah actually prayed for success. Nehemiah in chapter 1, verse 11, he says, God, when I speak to the king today, give me success. Joseph, notice, he doesn't even pray for success. In fact, I want to talk about something called the success circle. What the pattern is proximity. Joseph was tight with God. And because he was tight with God, God gave him power. And because God gave him power, read the text. He experienced prosperity. I can't spell with one arm, okay? That's my excuse, all right? So don't judge me. So he had prosperity. And then what happens next? Promotion. This is literally the pattern we see with Esther, with Daniel, with our buddy here, Joseph. Proximity, the Lord was with him. Because of that, he had favor or power. And because of that favor or power, God blessed him. And when God blessed him, it was obvious to everyone. In fact, look, verse 3, the master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant and made him overseer of his house and everything he put in his charge. That is pretty cool. That would be cool if it was the end of the story, but it's not. He's tested. In fact, Potiphar's wife comes to him because I guess the guy was pretty handsome and says, will you sleep with me? And he says, no, I'm not gonna sleep with you. But she says, why not? You know, you have access to everything. Everything that's in my husband's charge, you have access to. You have power. But he didn't let that get to his head. He realized that his power was dependent upon his relationship with God. Look at verse 9. It says, there is no one greater in this house than I. He has withheld nothing from me except for you because you are his wife. How could I do this great evil and sin against God? Again, he stands alone. And because he stands alone, he stood out. I mean, what person would refuse the boss's wife? And yet he chooses to honor God rather than his own pleasures. And what happens? She screams, he leaves his robe, and guess what? He proved his integrity, but he's put into prison. We see this back and forth with Joseph. He stands out, and because he stands out, he has to stand alone. As we continue on, he is put into prison. And look at verse 21. Even though he was confined in a jail, which, by the way, how many of us, if we were thrown into jail for like our integrity, we'd be a little bit ticked. Anybody? I would be. God, I follow you and I tell the dreams that you put in my heart and my brothers put me in a pit and sell me. God, I stand up for you and refuse sexual temptations and I'm put into jail. Joseph did not become a victim. Instead, he became a victor. Many times in life, we have a chance to be a victim or a victor. Victims are people, I'm not talking about victims of a crime, I'm talking about a mindset. The mindset of a victim is someone who lies in bed. Blame, excuses, and denial. I've been there. Have you guys ever been in bed before? Right? You've been there. Something happens to you and you just adopt this mindset of like the world's happening to me and I'm blaming and making excuses and living in denial. A victor is somebody who puts their oar in the water and moves forward. He took ownership. He took accountability. And he took responsibility for his situation. I'm just gonna do that, all right? Can't talk, think, and hold a pen and one arm at the same time. All right, we're all good. Joseph chooses to put his oar in the water and move forward in life. He chooses to, what I call, show up filled up. So many of us, we show up empty, let's be honest. Showing up empty means that we pull from other people affirmation. We pull from other people promotions or scholarships. It's like we always go around needy and hungry. And don't you feel that in human relationships, anybody? You guys feel that? You can feel that when you're being that, and you can feel when somebody else is being that. So when I consult with businesses, I talk about showing up filled up. That's exactly what Joseph does. Joseph's in jail, and yet he goes through that success circle again. Look at verse 22 and 23. Verse 21, the Lord was with him, gave him favor. Joseph is, it's obvious. And so the chief jailer gives him the keys to the prison and says, you control everything, you're in charge. Joseph showed up, filled up, and we have proof of this because in verse 4, he actually cares for the fellow prisoners. He doesn't just think about himself and his story. It says in verse 4, he took care of them. And in verse 6, he saw that they were dejected. They wake up one day, they come into prison, and they're bummed. And he says, why are you bummed? Verse 7, and they say, because we have dreams. And the dreams were not good. We have a cupbearer, and we have this baker. And the reality is that one of them is gonna live and one of them is gonna die. And if you're taking notes, he interprets the prisoner's dreams, and one does die and one does get promoted. So what happens? Well, what happens is he's forgotten. Joseph is forgotten in jail. Look at verse 23 of chapter 40. The cupbearer did not remember him, but he forgot him. For two years. And many of us, me included, I would have thrown in the towel. What do you mean? God, I keep stepping up for you. I keep standing up for you. And I keep standing alone. But Joseph never forgot that the one person who didn't leave him was God. So, women, have you ever wanted your man to shave? By the way, weird question, but have you ever wanted anybody? Yes, thank you. All right, one person. Okay, good. Well, listen, here's a verse to prove this, okay? All right, let's go to chapter 41. First service, man, all the ladies raised their hand. You know, chapter 41, verse 14, Joseph goes from pit to Potiphar to prison to palace. Pharaoh has a dream. How does Pharaoh have a dream? Who gave that dream to Pharaoh? Anybody? God. This was Joseph's promotion moment. And it says that he had a dream. He didn't know how to interpret it. Finally, the cupbearer is like, oh yeah, that one guy, Joseph. He sends for Joseph. He hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself, there you go, and changed his clothes, there you go. You can use that one too. What happens? He interprets the dream. So it's so cool that Joseph says, again, I'm standing before Pharaoh alone, and because of it, I'm gonna stand out. So he stood before Pharaoh, and he interprets the dream, and the dream is that there's gonna be these cows, and they're hungry, and what happens next? He basically says, look, you need a smart guy to run the whole nation. Better go find him, Pharaoh. And Pharaoh turns to him and says, you're it. And Joseph's like, all right, amazing. Joseph gets promoted to the second highest position in the world. Did you catch that? Don't miss this. Many times we think our dreams are about us only. They're not. They're about helping other people. God's put within a lot of us right now a dream, a big dream. And we're scared to even say it. We're scared to think about it. And that big dream is actually not about us. It's about us partnering with God to bring about more people being helped in the world today. That's exactly what Joseph does. It says in verse 43, Pharaoh let him ride in his second best Lamborghini. And they proclaim before him, bow the knee, and they set him over all of Egypt. It says the second chariot, but that's the translation today. The guy goes from prison to palace in one day. How many of you want to go from prison to palace, right? Some of you feel that way. Some of you feel that way right now. If you're honest, you're saying, Kerry, I'm in a prison. Well, God can give you that promotion, but don't forget, it's all about standing out.
And many times in order to do that, we need to stand alone. In chapter 41, verse 55, he literally saves the world. Because of his plan to escape the famine, everyone is impacted. In fact, his brothers come back, bow before him, so that dream actually came true, and Joseph was finally vindicated. Pretty amazing story. So, what about the application? What about you? What about me? How many of you are wearing Nikes, by the way? Anybody? Anybody wearing Nikes? I will not call you up on stage, don't worry, okay? How many of you have Apple products? Raise your hand. Okay, we got two Androids over there. All right, it's all good. It's all good. It's all good. See, many times we hear a story like this and we're like, oh, you know, what he's talking about today is like dreamers like Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, right? Or Phil Knight of Nike. See, we kind of hold these people up in high esteem and we say, these are the people who stood out. And by golly, they did stand alone. If you know business, you know that Steve Jobs actually got kicked out of his own company in 1985. Oh, and in his spare time, I guess he just created Pixar. Ah, you know, what else do you have to do? Let's just create Toy Story and Cars and all these movies that many of us have seen. And we look at Phil Knight, and he had to sell shoes out of his car to track, high school track athletes for a long time. And he had to stand up against his dad who, you know, told him, you went to Stanford, why don't you do something real with your life? We hold these people up in high esteem and we say, well, they were entrepreneurs. By the way, this week I found out what the word entrepreneur means. Does anybody know? That means bearer of risk. Isn't that cool? Entrepreneurs are bearers of risk. And many of us, we think, well, you know, those guys are crazy. Unless we look at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 is called the Hall of Faith. And by the way, Joseph is in there. And it says, by faith, Rahab hid the spies. By faith, Noah built the ark. By faith, Abraham went to a country that he didn't even know where he was going. We look at Hebrews chapter 11 and say, well, gee, these people were spiritual entrepreneurs. I came across a quote a few years ago when God was knocking at the door of my heart, and I was perplexed. I was actually quite scared, because this quote by Henry Blackaby says, what are you doing in your life right now that unless God shows up, you will fail? And the kid liked that one. But isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy verse or quote? I read that and there was nothing. Like the extent of my risk was Carrie went to the cupboard, got popcorn, and decided which Netflix series he would watch, right? Is this true for a lot of us? A lot of us, I mean, that's the extent of our faith, of our risk. We don't have this risk for God. And all I'm saying is that biblical? Now you might say, well, what are examples of risk? Examples of risk might be that you're a student and everybody else is making fun of someone, bullying them, and you actually choose to stand up. And trust me, you will stand alone. It might be in a job situation where you know everyone is fudging the numbers and you know you're not supposed to. For me, 6 years ago, I got the knock on the door to my heart. I was a teaching pastor, maybe some of yours, 3 miles down the road at a church. Everything was safe and secure. 3 kids, wife, mortgage, health benefits, their 12 years. They slated me to be the next lead pastor. Only you know what? God's knocking at the door of my heart saying, I want you to go in the business world. And I said, what? I got my doctorate, my master's, and my bachelor to teach Bible stories. What business is gonna hire me? And let me tell you, I was scared. I was absolutely scared. Besides, pastors only leave churches if they steal money or commit adultery. I'm just being real, right? I'm just being real. You don't go up to the church and say, well, you know, I think God's telling me to go. Why? Well, I don't know. I'm gonna create this thing. Well, what is that thing? I don't know. But that's what I felt. So for me, that's actually what I did. And let me tell you, it was lonely at times, but it was an amazing wild ride, and I love it. Just first service, someone came up to me after, him and his wife, and said, I'm a lawyer, and she was something else, and they said, we hopped in the car today, and literally, God confirmed before we came to church today that we are supposed to leave our current professions. And they said, then we came to first service. Now we know. And I said, wow, that's amazing, you know, good for God. The point is this, folks, who's calling the shots in your life and my life? I saw this bumper sticker years ago. It says, God is my co-pilot. I think that's the most unbiblical bumper sticker I've ever seen. Is Jesus calling the shots and you're having chats? And hey, where should we go today, Jesus, you know? The Bible I know says that you follow Jesus. And Jesus doesn't walk with you, you walk with him, right? But we don't like that as Americans a lot of times. So where am I wrapping this all up? I think that, let's show those crabs. Can we show those crabs for a moment? Let's give it a hand for the crabs, anybody, all right? Yeah, all right. Crabs have feelings. So I came across this story a few years ago, and she likes crabs. I love it. The Entrepreneur's Roller Coaster. It's this book, The Entrepreneur's Roller Coaster by Darren Hardy. It talks about this certain type of crab that's so tricky, it's so sneaky that nobody can catch it. So they have these baskets, and what they do is they put a little bit of food, a little bit of crab food in there. And the crabs walk by this certain type, and they look and they say, oh, crab Thanksgiving, I love it. They dive in the basket, and their buddies walk by. And they walk by and they see the other crab in there having a feast, and they're like, this is where it is. This is the action. They jump in, and pretty soon all these crabs jump in until the food's gone. Then what happens? Then they look at each other and say, why are we here? So one says, I'm out of here. And the one starts climbing out. And what do you think the others do? Think the others cheer him on with their claws? You know, go for it, bud. No. The others actually start pulling it down. And it climbs back up, and they pull it down, and it climbs back up, and they pull it down, and then they rip its claws off. Seriously. They would rather be wrong about the fact that they're in the wrong spot than to have this one emerge to freedom. Because that one emerging to freedom tells them that they're in the wrong spot. Now, we as humans, we don't do that type of stuff. We're much more civilized, right? Big question, I don't know. But what we use is we use shame. Like, God told you to do what? What are you gonna do? We use questions. Where are your credentials? Where's your financing? What's your backing? We use all kinds of things in our human relationships to stay safe and to stay stuck. And is that the marching orders that we've received from God? I'm glad Joseph didn't stay safe, and he didn't stay stuck. In fact, let's go to the last chapter of Genesis here, Genesis chapter 50, and we are all beneficiaries of other people who took risks, of people who stood up. Genesis chapter 50, Joseph's dad dies, and he's very concerned. All the brothers are concerned, and they say, Joseph was only nice to us because dad was around. What's gonna happen now that dad's dead? So they're scared. They go to him, and they say, hey, please, dad told us not to kill us, all right? Dad told Joseph. And he says, look, guys, and he starts weeping, and he actually says, you know what? Don't be afraid. I'm not in God's place. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. Do you realize how important Joseph's dream was? Just think about this for a moment. No Joseph means no Jews, right? This little dreamer kid that was a 17-year-old coat of many colors kid that had this dream that went to Egypt and saved the whole world from famine. No Joseph means no Jews. No Jews means no Jesus. No Jesus means no salvation. You and I, every single day of our lives, we are beneficiaries of people who stood up and in the process stood alone. So, what about you? What about me? Well, Joseph's only a future picture of Jesus. I found a website that has 60 similarities between Joseph and Jesus. Joseph sold for silver. Jesus sold for silver. Joseph's clothes stripped from him. Jesus's clothes stripped from him. Joseph's brothers betray him. Jesus's brethren betrayed him. The point is this: Joseph points us to Jesus. And what we do with Jesus is what really matters today. Jesus said in John 3, 14 through 15, we all like John 3, 16. But John 3, 14 through 15 says that the Son of Man must be lifted up so that everyone who believes in him may have eternal life. Think about that. Jesus says in his own words, I need to stand up so that I can save the world. Now, by standing up, he stood alone. He said on the cross, Father, why have you forsaken me? And I get it. We each have this chance in our life. I mean, how many of us were impacted by the Florida situation this week? All of us were. I mean, all you needed to do was just flip on anything. And none of those people knew that that was their last day. You and I don't know that today is not going to be our last day. So what happens many times is we get all gung-ho about movies. We watch movies and we're like, oh man, that is so fantastic. And then we go to our lives and the highlight of our day is when we open the fridge and we spill the milk all over the kitchen, right? And then we need to get out that Swiffer. You know those Swiffer things? I've used one, come on. Any men out there? Okay, forget it, all right, good. Look at that guy, little guy in the front row, good for you. But so we watch this and we say, I mean, the little guy like Frodo, I mean, that's a cool story. He's fighting orcs with his blue blade. And then there's our lives. And so what we often do is we abdicate our lives. We think, well, there, you know, my 20 years don't count. My next 50, my next 80, my next 10, what does that matter? And so we fall in love with these movies, and yet Joseph Campbell, this guy who was an anthropologist, he wrote a book called The Hero with 1,000 Faces, and he said every movie, every culture, every book is about the hero's journey. And do you realize that you are the main character in the hero's journey that God has created for you? And do you know that the angels, it says in the Bibles, the angels are actually leaning in, looking at your life and saying, I hope he can stay strong. I hope she can stay pure. I hope they can take action. That's the crazy reality about our lives today, that our stories that are gonna go by like this on earth are actually gonna be told for eternity. And they're all gonna reflect back to the main character, God. I'm gonna ask the band to come up, and if you look at your outline, the very last blank may be the most important blank you see in a long time. You see, there's a word in English, we call it decide, but it's actually the Latin word cadere or cadere. What are other words that end with C-I-D-E in English? Anybody, shout it out. Suicide. Homicide, insecticide, pesticide, a lot of death going on, right? But guess what the word decide means? Decide means to kill off. It means to kill off your other options. And many of us have been told to keep all of our options open. You know, that's good advice. God says that we each have a moment in time to decide to kill off the other options and decide what we're going to do with our lives. For some of us today, that means to, for the first time ever, give up control of our lives and give control of our lives over to God. To say, Jesus, you paid the price for my sin on the cross, and I'm claiming that and giving you control of my life. That's a big stand. That's like the stand. But there's a lot of other people here today that have been playing it safe and playing it small, and we aren't spiritual entrepreneurs, and we aren't standing up, and we aren't standing alone. And as a result, we have a decision too. So with your blank, I want you to either put, today I choose to blend in, or today I choose to stand out. It's one or the other. You can't go halfway. So I'm gonna ask everyone to bow their head. I'm gonna give just a quick little response time here. God, I just pray for these precious people, each one of them worthy of your son coming to earth and shedding his blood. And God, there may be people here today that for the first time ever, they say, I need to take a stand. I need for the first time today to give my life to you. And for those people, I just want to invite them to right now, just to pray and say, God, I choose you. God, I give you my life. God, I want you to give me your free gift today of salvation. There's others of us that have been playing it safe and playing it small. We know that we have not lived this life where you even need to show up. We are so comfortable, so safe, so secure that our faith is really non-existent. And we need to draw a line in the sand today. And we need to say that today I'm not gonna blend in anymore. I don't know what it fully means, but I'm gonna stand out by standing alone. If that's true for any decision today, salvation or just to have God shake you up a little bit, with the lights dim and no one looking, I'm just gonna ask you to straight up just stand. Just stand and say, today is the day. Today is the day. And we're not judging, we're not looking. This is between you and God. You are in a safe place and God is looking down and seeing your stance. Because it's a lot easier to stand in here than it is out there. You're among friends and family. So God, for all the people that are standing, I just pray that you give them your comfort. I pray that you give them your grace this week. Let's all stand together now as we sing our final song.